Before we get started with this episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast, let me talk about mybookie.ag. Fun, fun place to make your golf wagers, your basketball. You got Final Four coming up this weekend. You got baseball. So much cool stuff there. They do politics. They do entertainment. They bet on anything they can. So go check them out, mybookie.ag. And if you're a first-time depositor and use promo code BENCHED, you get a 50% first-time deposit bonus up to $1,000. Deposit $100, free $50. Deposit $500, free $250. So on and so forth over at mybookie.ag. When we do the picks to win at the end, we use the odds from mybookie.ag. As the week goes on, they use the top 20. They have each ways, all the cool stuff you're looking for in your golf bets. Like a Euro Tour, the works, Masters odds already out. So go check it out. Mybookie.ag, promo code BENCH for a 50% first-time deposit bonus. Now, to this week's edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast, previewing the 2019 Valero Texas Open.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when they come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. This week, previewing the 2019 Valero Texas Open, 1 week to the Masters. So in order to preview tonight's or this week's golf tournament and recap last week's and much, much more, my co-host, as always, you can find him on Twitter, at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing, man?
I guess that just kind of depends. You know, I played golf on Saturday in shorts and then woke up this morning and there was ice outside. So that's the Kentucky weather update. And then, of course, Kentucky lost. And, you know, so it's just I'm alive, man. I'm barely making it, but I'm here.
Well, the bright side is the Masters is next weekend. So you'll be good.
Yeah, that's like the only saving grace from this whole entire like past month for me. Is that literally like just looking forward to the Masters every day?
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be absolutely awesome. We got a special guest joining us next week for that one. So that'll be tons of fun. But before we get there next week, we got the Valero Texas Open this week. And we have the WGC Dell match play that just took place with Kevin Kisner, who played well the previous year. We talked about him as kind of a dark horse guy. And he played well enough to win it this go around. Any takeaways from the match play besides, you know, Molinari just kicking everyone's ass again?
Well, he did look good. Yeah, Kisner, man. You know, he had a pretty difficult draw. Obviously, went to a one hole or a few hole playoff with Poulter there and pulled that out. But he's just he's a killer in these types of events. And you know, if he's got to be on the President's Cup team this year, I would think he'd have to be no matter how he's playing, he'd have to be just a pick because he's been playing better. He's been trending kind of up and up and up over the last few weeks. So it doesn't surprise me that he won. But I feel like, you know, he would be a really good asset for the Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams moving forward because he's got a lot of experience. But man, the dude just goes out there and just does not back down to anybody. It's pretty fun to watch him play match play. It was fun to watch him this past week play match play.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You mentioned the President's Cup thing has got my attention. Did you see Lee Westwood's lovely tweet about Kevin Kisner might have been a good fit at the Paris Golf Course?
I did see that. It was a pretty good shot there.
Keep twisting the knife.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
It's true.
You know, we've got a bunch of bombers. But if you look at, like, the guys who were left there, it was a lot of Euro Cuppers and Kuchar and Kisner. You know, so they've got some really good players, too. It'll be – obviously, we're still a year and a half removed from the next Ryder Cup, and we have the President's Cup coming up this fall. But, you know, it's hard to see him not making the team after that performance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tiger Rory, I know on Friday that Tiger Rory match came out due to them both winning their pods, and the TV gods rejoiced because they had something to tune into for the weekend. The rest of the brackets didn't quite turn out to plan for the TV folks. I did not get to see much of Tiger Rory. I got highlights. I was watching all the updates on the phone and everything. Did Tiger Rory live up to the hype for you?
No, I didn't watch. I woke up after they were a few holes in already, and I didn't watch a whole heck of a lot of it. But from what I gathered, neither one of them really played that great. And basically Tiger just kind of out unterribled him. Rory, that is. Rory couldn't make a putt. It was really, really poor effort on the greens from him, which is kind of standard. Yeah. I mean, it's not really surprising at all. Did it live up to the hype? It was golf. It was two of the more popular golfers, I guess you could say. You know, it did. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it sort of seemed like from what I was picking up from all the people I follow on Twitter, yourself and others, and then just watching the PGA Tour app and everything and tuning into the radio station on Sirius once in a while, it just seemed like they're kind of making it happen. Even there was tweets from some of the beat reporters out there that if Rory could just putt, he'd be up like four holes by now. Like, it was just one of those.
Yeah.
Rory paid. They said he basically decided to play his worst round when he faced Tiger. So who knows? Shit happens. But at least we got to see that, because it was kind of a bloodbath in the grand scheme of things. You mentioned all the Euros. Just they showed up in this match play event. They played really, really well. And it was pretty impressive. But one Euro, one crybaby Euro named Sergio Garcia, and one stickler, hard-ass, whatever you want to name him, Matt Kuchar, had a little bit of an incident on, I believe, the seventh hole. Why don't you let us know what happened there? Because I've listened to many different versions of it today. It's been very interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't see it live. I just kind of got that. But from what I gathered, I did see the replay. Sergio hit a putt, knocked up there like literally 2 or 3 inches. It was, you know, it was an automatic gimme.
Inside the leather. Inside the leather.
It was not even leather. It was almost inside the fucking hosel. And so he just walks up there and just taps it, and it just jerks lips out. And I don't know exactly how it played out, but other than he ended up losing the hole because he wasn't conceded before he actually hit the putt. So I think the match play officials were like, basically, there's nothing you can do. The hole's over and Kuchar wins. Well, I guess Sergio obviously got pissed off about that. And in order to make it right, you know, I mean, Kuchar could have said, all right, well, this next hole I concede to just make it even. But he didn't. If you go watch the video of those two sitting in a cart together, it is fucking awkward as hell.
It seems pretty bad.
I don't know who made them do that, but that was – it was almost like Sergio was being held hostage by Kuchar. Like, Kuchar's like, we're going to fucking make a video. We're going to make this right, make me look better. I don't give a shit. And, you know, gun to head kind of thing to Serge, but it was weird. It was an odd situation. And, it, you know, it really could not happen to, like, the two worst people as far as, like, shit's already been happening with them. So let's just blow shit up even more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I thought of. I saw it. I was just laughing because I play in a summer league where we have groups and, you know, play match play for, like, 9 holes and in the afternoons. And there's one guy that I know really well. He likes to talk trash all the time, so I mess with him. And he basically had a putt like that, and I didn't concede it to him. He did the same thing on the very first hole. And he looks at me and goes, is this how it's going to fucking go? I said, uh-huh. We just moved on, and I beat him. But I went to the last hole. It was good, but I just did it to mess with him because he likes to talk so much trash to everybody. So there's that kind of angle in match play. But like you said, this wasn't it. This was more like Sergio didn't even give Kuchar the chance to say, yes, I concede the putt. Even though it's probably like common sense stuff, like
you said, it was an auto give. I mean, it was literally 2 or 3 inches. It was right there by the hole. But at the same time, like, you got to at least look up to Kuch and be like, you know, he's got to acknowledge, yeah, it's good. Yeah, I mean, you know, so the rules, I'm pretty sure, clearly state that. But either way, you know, Kuchar's like in the videos, like, I didn't know how to make it. I didn't know how I could make it right. And like, just the way, like, to make it right is just tease the next fucking hole, Kuchar. Like, it's not difficult.
Just like Kuchar doesn't know how to tip a guy in Mexico. It's crazy. Yeah,
it's a really odd situation. And like I said, it couldn't happen to, like, that. It couldn't be more ironic that it happened to those two people.
Yeah, that is fitting. You're correct. It is fitting. It was those two. And it's so good. Because, like, Tiger and those guys, that never would happen. Like, that's just not happening. So that's really interesting stuff. Any other takeaways from the weekend? Again, Kisner takes down Kuch. Molinari finishes third as he throttled being Beergaard in the consolation match. Casey played well. A lot of good stuff, like I said, from the Euros. And then, you know, the big boys in America, not so much.
Well, Beergaard took down Tiger. He had, I think, 3 birdies and an eagle on the back nine to beat Tig, which, you know, Tiger's, that was his 30s. He played 36 holes on Saturday, and it probably was a blessing for him that he gets to not have to hike around 36 more on Sunday. So, but yeah, other than that, it was a pretty, you know, usual golf tilt fest for me anyways.
The last thing I want to mention is I want, as a big guy myself, I want to give props to Kisner's caddy. I don't know how he walked that many rounds of golf like that. He looked like he was ready to walk 36 more. Give him mad props there. I guess that's the conditioning of a big man. But
did you see dude's calves?
Yeah, that's true. Hey, that's what I think helps me out. I got tree trunks to carry my fat ass around.
Dude was out there in like 20 mile an hour wind. It was 40 degrees in shorts.
That's my man.
It was something to see for him. And they said it was like probably in the 20s with a wind chill that on Saturday morning. That's how cold it was. Awesome. So yeah, it was either Saturday or Sunday morning. Either way, he was in shorts. So
that's awesome. And then at the Punta Cana, Graham McDowell takes that down. I watched zero of that. I know Sanjay was in contention. He kind of blabbered it away, but still puts up another nice round. Did you have any takeaways from the Punta Cana?
I didn't follow it much. I played one lineup and got like 4-6 through and never paid that much more attention to it.
And then I do have one more comment to make in our Slack chat, which is always popping off. Our boy Hamdog.
Yeah.
He did very, very, very well. He finished second in the Gups Corner contest, so make sure you enjoy that. And he did very well. He had Kisner and he had – I believe Cooch. And our boy Dirework also had some nice lines on there. So the Slack chat, you know, even on a match play week where things are a little awkward, they've been grinding it. And there was guys, Joe Rogers was in there this like 1 o'clock my time, 4 o'clock Eastern, already asking what the chalk plays are. The pricing's probably been on for an hour. He's already like chomping at the bit. So
I love it, dude. Those guys are awesome in there, and they don't stop, and it's cool because keeps you engaged.
Yep, most definitely. You get a little nugget you might not even have thought about.
Yep, for sure.
But let's go on to the Valero Texas Open. It's a different time of year this year before the Masters. Should be a fun tournament. Decent group here. 144-man field. Top 70 in ties make the cuts. Jesse, give us some past event history for the Valero Texas Open.
Should be 156, right? Is it 156?
No, it changed for this one because about scheduling-wise, I was reading about it earlier, 144 men.
Okay, all right. Well, either way,
unless I read something wrong, but that's what I was reading.
Yeah, I don't know, to be 100% honest with you, but either way, it's like 12 guys, so you're going to have your standard top 70 and ties cut here, so it's just your normal run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event right before the best tournament of the year. But either way, last year, Andrew Landry, 2 shots, 17 under. He won by 2 shots over Mullinax and Sean O'Hare. 2017, Kevin Chappell was the winner, 12 under, 1 shot over Brooks. 2016, Charlie Hoffman was the winner, 12 under, 1 shot over Patrick Reed. 2015, Jimmy, I play well every time we go to Texas, Walker, 11 under, 4 shots over Jordan Spieth, and I got to go all the way to 14. Stephen Bowditch was the champion. Yeah, 8 under, 1 shot over Will McKenzie and Daniel Summer Hayes. Going back to 2015, I don't know if you remember or not, but this was the year that there was just some insane winds came through. I think it was on Thursday afternoon or something, and basically eliminated half the field. The cut was 7 over par that year. It's an outlier, but just to kind of piggyback off that, it is important to kind of watch the wind splits here. There is potential that this week tee time could have a bit of an advantage because it is in Texas here. So,
yeah, we'll definitely make sure like on Wednesday to bring that up in the Slack chat what the latest and greatest is, because right now it's anywhere from 5 to 20 miles an hour each day, and so that could vary tremendously. And it's windy where I live every afternoon, but it varies, so I can tell what Texas is going to be like. 5 to 20 mile an hour winds, like you said, if it's afternoon gets the heavy dosage, well, we can play with that a little bit. So something to keep in mind there. As it does come into play, as you mentioned, and can be a full force. This has been the host course since 2010. It's a Greg Norman and Sergio Garcia. Sergio Garcia is a player advisor, built this course. It's a par 72 and a very, very long par 72. 3 par 5s over 590 yards, 4 par 4s over 450 yards, 3 par 3s over 205 yards. It is very, very long, as I said, and the fairways are very, well, not very, very narrow, but very narrow to the fact that if you miss a little bit, you can survive. If you miss a lot, you're going to be in the trees, you're going to be in bushes, you're going to be in just native area, you're going to be in a problem. Reading some quotes, you basically need to punch out and pray for par if you're in there. If you try to be a hero, you're going to get a lot of bogeys. And that takes us to, this is the second highest non-major course in bogeys or worse on the PGA Tour. And it's the bottom 10 in birdies and eagle rate. So like you said, scoring is very limited here for the most part. And if it gets windy, it gets really, really nasty. So the narrow fairways, the wind makes it very, very difficult. Those longer holes, depending on which direction the wind's going, makes it difficult. And then to top it off, you have elevated greens all over the place with big runoffs and drop-offs. To just, if you need to be a great scrambler, basically, to be able to get up and down if you're not hitting greens. The course is Bermuda, and it got overseeded for this early time of year. The greens were overseeded with Poa and Velvet. The fairways were overseeded with ryegrass, and the rough was overseeded with extra ryegrass so they can resemble Augusta. That was their whole plan, is to resemble Augusta. So bottom line is you can still bomb it here and have fun, because bombers will have an advantage if you're accurate. You have to be tremendously accurate off the tee. Your approach game has to be on point. You need to hit greens. If you're scrambling, you're praying for pars. If you can hit greens, you have a much better chance of putting up some nice scores. And birdies are just an extreme, extreme advantage of this course. So something to keep in mind there. What key stats are you looking at this week, Jesse?
This is similar to 2 weeks ago when we were at the Valspar, in that, you know, it's kind of ball strikers. So that's pretty much what I'm concentrating on. A lot of the tee to green stats individually off the tee, bogey avoidance, factoring that in, approach, ball striking, and greens in regulation as well. But I'm throwing in some par four scoring again too, just because like the par fives are birdieable, but they're long, like you said. So, you know, there's, if you can get somebody who can get some par fours, then you're going to be a little bit ahead of the game there as far as making birdies on them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, let's talk Fanshare Sports. We'll go in some guys in some good recent form. Last three events on tour and DraftKings scoring in this field, Johnny Vegas averaging over 82 points, Kokrak at 80, you got Ricky Fowler, Jonathan Bird coming in at almost 80 DraftKings points, Jimmy Furyk at 78, got Sungjae, DJ Trahan coming in at 74, Sung Hoon Kang, Matt Kuchar, and Nick Taylor. Jesse, that just sums up what kind of field we are looking at this week.
Yeah.
If you go back to the past six, Ricky takes the lead. Still got Kokrak, Kuchar, Furyk, Bird, Trahan, but then Nate Lashley, Taylor Gooch, and Benny On come on the schedule. There were still, yes, not ideal. If we look back to the last three Valero Texas Opens for players in this field, a lot of the high scorers played here last year, but like Finau was phenomenal here. Had 21 birdies, one eagle, and 10 bogeys. Got him 104 DraftKings points. So he was able to have, you know, bombs away and have some fun with it. Joaquin Niemann also got 95 points here last year. But like Andrew Landry's played here twice. He's averaged over 90 points. Kevin Tway's averaged over 81. Kang almost 80 in his two appearances. And then Aaron Baddeley almost 80 in his three appearances. Anyone else? Laird, Marty Party Laird loves this course at 79. Ryan Moore. And then Charlie Hoffman, Texas boy, does very, very well here. If you look at the good course form and good course history coming to this event, again, Joaquin Niemann is one of them. Aaron Baddeley makes sense for what we just talked about, like Ryan Moore. For those on Fanshare, when you get the two green lights, that's usually when they both line up, good course form and good course history. Let me just tell you this much. There's not much this week. I just named off the three guys that are both green. Usually I have a bunch to pick from. That was it. Yeah. So that tells you everything you need to know right there. All right. Let's get into the DraftKings, Jesse. Let's move on with this. We got five guys over 10K. Ricky Fowler at 11.7, Cooch at 11.2, Finau at 10.8, Spieth at 10.3, and Sungjae M all the way up to 10.1. What are you looking at up here?
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of this region. I probably won't play a whole heck of a lot on DraftKings. Some of it could come down to kind of just ownership projections and tags and stuff on Fanshare, and just kind of seeing where some of these guys are landing. I feel like from a stats perspective, you know, Kuchar could do well here. Overall, though, like, he's not played well here. That, I mean, he finished fourth in 2014 and he had a 15th and a 13th place finish, you know, kind of sprinkled in there. But the last 2 years, 51st and 40th, 42nd, if you go back to 2016. So, like, the, I don't know, he's not been that great here recently. Now, he is playing probably pretty close to the best golf of his life this year. So you may want to ignore course history with him and just kind of go from, you know, his recent play, which has obviously been pretty good of late. Ricky, I don't think I'll mess with him too awful much. I'm just, it's hard to, he's got to win just about to pay off that $11,700 price tag, and I would rather bet against that. Finau, I mean, he's okay. He finished 30th in 2017. But he's not been playing that great, at least up to Tony Finau standards. And again, super high price tag. So if I'm going to go up here, it's probably going to be Cooch. But like I said, I'm just not a huge fan of this region. And I mean, I can't pay that price for Jordan Spieth. And man, Sungjae at 10,100. I mean, are you on Sungjae at 10,100? I don't.
I want to be, but no, not at that price point. Not with the guys that we're going to talk about in the next 8 and 9K range. I can't.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
But then that's where the GPP angle come into play. Like if you're max entering, then there is appeal there. But
I would think so. I would think tough. With Sungjae, if you're playing the lower dollar entries, that he's going to be lower owned. I would think that his ownership will go up the higher dollar you get into, because he's not as well known as your just casual golf player or whatever. Maybe somebody who's just going to the golf tournament this week or something like that. So. And then all of your sharps or sharks or whatever you want to call them, know Sungjae, know his ability, know what he can do. He is trending towards a win. I will give him that much. Like, he's got 3 top 10s in his last, what, 4 starts with a miscut as the fourth option there.
3 top 10s.
Of course, it was at Corrales. He finished 7th. So, you know, that was a really weak field. But Valspar was similar field to this, probably a little bit stronger. API, obviously, was much stronger field, and he finished 3rd. So, I mean, it's just hard to get the mind around that. But then again, a lot of people will be thinking that way. So do you go the other way? That's the contrarian play, I guess.
Yeah, he would be the play up here because most people, if they're going to pay up, they're going to go to the big-time names. And everything we said about, you know, how's he priced up here, well, that's what everyone's going to say, except the sharks, like you said. So I could see the appeal to him here. You mentioned in your stats that you want to compare this to kind of the Valspar feel, and he got a T4 there playing that course. He is a great ball striker. We've been on Sungjae off and on all season. When he's on, he's very, very good. We've seen him also blow up at times, but right now he's on. So I could see the appeal in a GPP for Sungjae at 10-1. Finau's on the board at 10-8, but again, like you said, he's not playing great right now, but he did play good here 2 years ago. And then Kuchar, he's made 7 out of 7 cuts here, but only 1 top 10. He's coming in good form. You got to imagine, you got to wonder how much, you know, playing 72 holes of golf on 2 days is going to do for him, but
I'm surprised he's in this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I thought he would have backed out, but he's probably got some Skechers deal or something he's got to show up for. Yeah, you know, get that cash. But he'll make his cut and probably go to T25. I just don't see him continuing, but I just probably jinxed it right there, so play Matt Kuchar. yeah, if I'm paying up here, it's Sungjae. And it's just weird coming up here for Sungjae. Maybe in the next 2 days, my thought process will change on that one, and I'll gravitate more to him, realizing, like you said, when we see fan share ownership and everything, that he is much more viable. It's just at first glance, it just doesn't, you know, pan out at that price range.
I will say this with Sungjae, though, too. Like, most of your podcasts are going to talk about him because his price is way up there, and he's got three top 10s in his last 10 finishes. Is that going to correlate to high ownership? I don't. That's the ultimate question, right? Like that's the ultimate question with him. You know, I would lean no, just from past experience, especially this year. I've noticed that a lot of guys who are getting some buzz on or getting a lot of tags on FanShare, they're not getting the ownership because people are going to think they're going to be chalky. So, you know,
that's very true.
It's like zig and zag, and then zag, and then zig, and then just fuck your mind.
People
just
are trying to outthink themselves,
blow your whole fucking mind up. You know what I mean?
Yep, I agree with you there. Let's go to the 9K range. Pretty good looking range here is why you can almost avoid the 10K and above if you so choose. Billy Ho at $9,800, great ball striker extraordinaire. Jimmy Furyk at 96, coming in very, very hot. Kokrak almost got it done at the Valspar at 94. You got Lucas Glover at 93, Bennion at 92, Ryan Moore at 91, and Lucas Biergaard at 9,000. Some really, really good golfers here with Biergaard sneaking into the 9K range. What do you got here, Jesse?
Yeah, for sure, Kokrak. I mean, that's like my number one play on the board for me. Like almost
real quick, how chalky do you think he's going to be? Because I think we're all on him. We've all been on him. Like, and he's been one of the high guys each week. How high do you think $9,400 to take him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, going back to what I was just talking about with him, like people are going to think he's going to be chalky, and then they're going to go off of him, and then he's not going to be as chalky as everyone believes. I mean, at least that's my thinking. You know, it really depends on, you know, just that angle of it, the ownership projections when they come out. Like, because if you notice when they come out, people are going the other way a lot this year. I like him enough. Like, I don't give a shit. I'll just play him and then try to figure out something else in different areas, because that he's going up and up and up and like playing really well. And this type of golf course should set up well for him, where he's really good hitting greens, and if he just make a few putts, you know, he'll be there. So I do like Lucas Glover too. I mean, he did miss the cut in 2015, coming off a 13th place finish at the Valspar, missed cut the Players Championship before that, but 10th, 4th, and 7th in his three. So he's got four top 13s in his last five starts with one missed cut. And if you even go back further than that, he gets even better besides the missed cut at the Phoenix Open. I probably one and done them there. I won't be one and done them most likely this week, so we don't have any fear of that. Other than that, like, those would be my two favorite plays. I think Billy Horschel is interesting.
Yep.
He's, you know, 11th missed cut, 4th, 3rd missed cut, 3rd here. This is kind of just weird in that he's missed a couple cuts, but if he's making the cut since 2013, he's basically top 10-ing. And he has not missed a cut on tour since the Canadian Open last July, which I think he's got to be trending toward like one of the
longest streaks out there.
Yeah, longest streaks of making cuts. Now that Woodland missed a cut there, I think he's probably pretty close. So he's interesting at $9,800. Now that price tag, you're going to need a top 15 at least out of him. Can he do it? Yeah, but really, obviously that's the question. It's what you got to try to predict, which is why golf is so fucking hard to predict. Other than that, I mean, I think Ryan Moore will be chalky. I do think Ben On will be chalky too. Beauregard's interest, or I guess it's Beauregard.
I'm just not pronouncing the J. I'm just calling it Beauregard.
I'm gonna call him Luke.
That works too.
Now he's, you know, he hasn't missed a cut since last August. Before that, actually, he withdrew at the Nordea Masters in August. He missed a cut at the Scottish Open in July. So, obviously, playing pretty steady, good golf. He does have a win in there at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. And then a good showing last week. I don't know what to do with him as far as, because ownership-wise, like, he had such a good week last week. Everybody saw it. Does everybody jump on him this week? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a tricky one with him. And he also played a lot of golf last week. But he's a rookie. He's younger. He's thirsty. So I can see that being interesting. I'm 100% on board the Kokrak train with you. I get everything you said there. And I like Lucas Glover quite a bit. He could be a nice pivot there, because for some reason people just don't want to pay up for Glover. They just don't buy into the fact that he's actually pretty good, especially in this grouping. So I like both of those. Billy Ho is a GPP guy I'm really looking at here. Like you said, when he makes the cut, he does very, very well. He's made a boatload of cuts overall of late, and he's just a pure iron playing ball striker. He's very, very good with his irons. So if they're on, he could be a force here at this course. And then the only other guy you didn't mention, I just want to bring him up, is Jimmy Furyk. I know he's $9,600 bucks, but this course suits him. It's like you said, you know, he finished great at the Valspar. His last few events, T17, T18, a second, a T9. He's made four cuts here, two top tens. He's played just really, really good, consistent golf right now. He played good at the match play. So I think he'll be another under-owned kind of guy. You can look at it, $9,600 bucks. Actually, if you want to play cash games, I think Furyk's good cash game play. He might not have that GPP upside for you, but cash game, I like him quite a bit. But I shouldn't say he doesn't have GPP upside, because, like I said, he just finished, you know, a second in a T9 three and four events ago. So he's competing, and it's a field that's not going to overwhelm things. So he's very, very interesting to me.
He's playing really well. The issue with him, obviously, is the length. This is a much longer golf course than what they have been playing. So you kind of got to factor that in a little bit. But I don't mind him, because he will just hit it down the middle and then hit it on the green. And if he makes some putts, he will make the cut. But like this range right here, like, it's really, really fun to play this range because I could see a lot of these guys either winning or missing the cut.
Definitely.
You know?
No, it like you could, every guy we named off, I could, if someone told me that they had them to win or they're one and done, I probably wouldn't argue with them. Like, I could see all of them doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a really, really good range. So potentially, the more I think about it, maybe that spreads out the ownership a little bit. And so you don't have to worry about it as much. Kochrack will probably be the highest owned either way, though.
I still think he's 20% plus.
I agree with you on that. I mean, it's just hard, especially judging by the past few weeks. And
it's like you said, just be different elsewhere. We said that so many times. Like,
yeah.
To win a GPP, you only need one or two guys at the most to be different. That's all you need. It's that simple. Sometimes just one guy different. It's all you really need. And so don't let it sway you from the good ones. Try to be different down below. Like, that's where all the wild cards sit. Let's get into that 8K range. This is another interesting range here. Abraham Answer at 89. He's a Texas boy. Graham McDowell at 88. Vegas at 87. Hugtung Lee at 86. Juiced Luton at 85. Ryan Palmer at 84. Badley at 83. Hoffman at 82. McCarthy at 81. Jamie Holmes at 8K. And Lucas List at $8,000. Fun range here. What are you looking at?
Yeah, this is another one. I mean, I really think that this is like the 8 and 9K range here is like generally what we're talking about in the 7K range, right? So, like, there's the guys who are, like, so sketched to miss the cut, but you could see them winning as well. So another good range here. I think, you know, from a stats perspective, Vegas rates out pretty well. His course history is sketchy, though. It's miscut 34th, miscut 68th, miscut 44th. I mean, that's pretty fucking odd, but 26th last week, 3rd the week before that, the Players' Championship, 23rd at the API, 16th at the Honda Classic. Just hitting a bunch of greens right now at this point, so I don't mind him. The price is high, though, which, you know, I've been saying that quite a bit, and I will continue to probably say that because this field is weak as shit. I do like Juiced
Luton.
Whatever. I like Juiced 85. I'll play him quite a bit. Ryan Palmer's interesting. He's a Texas boy. Generally plays pretty well here. Did miss the cut here last year, but 6th, 4th, 6th in the 3 years prior to that. And he's playing okay here recently. Did finish 4th at the Honda Classic and then missed the cut at the Players' Championship. Not super worried about that. Kind of back in his wheelhouse down here in Texas at this point. Aaron Badley, another guy at $8,300. I hate that price, but his fucking course history is way too good to ignore. Coming off the 7th at the Punta Canta, and then he was in contention, or at least he was around the top of the leaderboard with Arnold Palmer. Yeah, and then he shot 74 on Sunday. And then Puerto Rico, he finished 2nd and finished 7th, you know, like I said, at Corrales last week. So, and then last but not least, I do think Luke List will be chalky. I don't mind him, though, even though he has two missed cuts in a row here. I think the interesting guy here is J.B. Holmes.
He seems best priced in this tournament to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a winner this year already on tour. He did not play terribly last week at the – I know he didn't make it out of the group stage.
He was close, though. He was really close.
But didn't he beat Rahm? He, like, beat Rahm's ass.
I think so. Rahm got smoked. Yeah.
Because Rahm won his first match on Wednesday.
Because Kuchar came out of that one, I think.
Yeah, he won it pretty handily. And he was like, oh, this is Rahm's – this is basically Rahm's deal to lose because he won, like, 6-4 or something. And then JB, like, comes out and wins, like, the first – like, 6 of the first 8 holes or something on him and had him weighed down and ends up beating him, like, 3-2. I don't know. But he won that, so – anyways, and then whenever I look at on Fantasy National, you know, courses over 7,400 yards, JB rates out pretty well over the last 36 rounds. So I like JB as a pivot off of List there.
I like that because, you know, JB played great at Riviera, a longer course. Scrambling is important. Staying in the fairway is important. So he can do it. So I don't hate JB at $8,000 at all. Abraham Answer at 89 has my attention. T17 and a T12, his last two tournaments out. He's made both cuts here, and he's much, much better than he was those previous tournaments he played here. So Answer could be very, very interesting to me. It's a tilting GPP play that I will be looking at is Houtong Lee. You know, we were on him a couple weeks back. He missed the cut. He T9'd last week, then missed cut, T19 in a second. He's a very tilting man, but in GPPs, he's got that upside. He can bomb it, and if he's accurate, he can play in this one. So I don't hate Houtong at 86. Palmer is interesting, like you said. Luke List at 8K is another guy I could look at. But those would be the main ones I'd be looking at this week. Luton's coming in great form, as you mentioned, like really, really good form at T12, T10, and a 6, his last three events. I just don't know what to expect with him coming over here. He's been playing overseas the whole time. But he could be an interesting GPP play as well.
He was over here recently, though, wasn't he? He played.
Yeah, but I think his last few tournaments have been back in.
He played WGC.
Yeah.
And then he went to the Oman Open. Was that the one in Kenya?
I think
no, because that was like 2 weeks ago. This was this one started on the 3rd. So
okay, different one.
I don't know what Oman Open is, but it finished 12th.
Lovely. All right, let's get in the 7K range, 7,500 and above. Jesse, who are you looking at?
I mean, I don't think this is going to be like sneaky by any means, but Jimmy Walker at $7,800 is pretty odd price to me. 4th here last year, 13th the year before. He's won here before. I mean, not the form coming in like recently is not great, so maybe that's why he's priced down here. But I don't mind him at $7,800. I feel like he's like borderline cash just because of the course history, and he's another Texas boy. Justin Harding at 7,400, 77. Sorry, just looking at something else. Interesting. He's mostly like a European / Australian / Asian tour player. He's playing all over the world. Nobody will be on him in the lower dollar buy-ins. So GPP upside there as far as he goes. Neiman, man. So he was chalky as shit last week at Corrales, I'm pretty sure. I don't know what his ownership was. I didn't see it, but I'm pretty sure he was pretty chalky. And anyways, he missed the cut in Puerto Rico. Before that, you know, everybody's been jumping back on him. So it'll be interesting to see if they jump off at this point. If they do, I expect him to play well. If they don't, then he probably missed the cut.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I know it really makes a lot of sense that DK ownership does that to people, but it does. I mean, it's just a fact of the matter. Everybody knows it if you play DK.
It's facts. It happens all the time.
Chalky players miss cut because they feel
when you open the app on Thursday and you see that you have the chalk, you already know it's time to turn it off.
That's just how it works. Worst, isn't it? God.
Yep, it's the worst. But, yeah, I like those calls there. A couple of Siwoo Kim. I know he's tilting as all hell, but at $7,800, he is a pretty good player in this field. He's one of those guys that could top five at this place without any questions asked there, but also can miss the cut in a heartbeat. Sun Kang at $7,700 is on the radar. Mentioned how well he's played coming in here. Missed the cut last time here with T6, T42, his previous two events. He's made cut after cut so far this season. You mentioned Harding. I think he's a very interesting play. And then Joel Dahman at $7,500. He can be tilting. He got us a while back, but since that missed cut, back-to-back T12s, he has a T75 here last year. He's a ball striker. His irons are working. He plays very, very well, so someone to keep an eye on in this 7,500 and above range. Who do you have at 7,400 and below?
Man, I hate playing Mullinax, but like in this field, like I feel like he's kind of borderline cash. Finished 2nd here last year, obviously. Made 2 straight cuts on tour. He did miss the cut to Players' Championship. Before that, he made a bunch of cuts in a row, too. Going back basically this calendar year, he's missed 1 cut, and that was at the Players' Championship in the strongest field of the year. So kind of just don't even worry about that. But I don't know, man. Like, for me, GBPs, it'll be depending on, you know, if he's chalky or not, if he's highly touted. I'm going to probably back off, but if he's not, then I could see playing him. Fratelli is another guy, Texas boy. I believe he went to the University of Texas. He finished 20th here last year. 2 straight made cuts on tour. Didn't miss the cut at the Honda Championship or Honda Classic, and then a made cut to Genesis. But did make the cut at the Valspar and then Corrales this past week. Matt Jones, man. Like, so tilt my face off. He played well. First of all, he shot 66, which is 6 under. I think he was either the first round leader in Corrales or he was like 1 shot off. And then he came out the next day and made a 9 on the first hole.
That's a good way to start the day.
Yeah. So he was right back to 1 under after 1 hole. But I had a choice between him and somebody else last week, and I texted one of my friends and was like, you know, just guess what I did. I chose the wrong person, obviously. Because he started well and he played pretty well. And before that, you know, of course, at the Valspar, he was 13th too. So $7,200, like, I don't mind him at all. Again, borderline cash, did miss the cut here last year, but has some decent finishes here. And Aussies are known for playing pretty well around here. Obviously, I think besides Bodo, the other Aussie that's won here is Adam Scott. But it's pretty much the United States of America if you look at the flags around here besides Laird and those two. Anyways, back to the point here. So Matt Jones, I don't mind him one single bit. And like it, I would consider him in cash. Wyndham Clark, talk about him every fucking week. Because like he literally almost won me five figures at the Honda Classic. So my love for him is stay strong. He didn't make the cut to Valspar. He finished 37th. DQ'd at the Players' Championship. We talked about it after that week. And anyways, I don't mind going back to him for this for that price in this field. Mackenzie Hughes, another guy. He's okay at $7,100. His course history is miscut. He did finish second last week. Chris Kirk, pretty good course history here. 8th, miscut, 13th, 8th, 48th. And then he's been playing better. He did miss the cut to Valspar. He had one crazy round. Yeah, it was at the Arnold Palmer on Saturday. He just made everything. So for the price, not terrible. And then last but not least, Cramer Hickok. This is the guy I've been keeping my eye on. He's made every cut since basically, well, since the since AT&T Pebble Pebble Beach there. So since they've come back to the kind of the right coast there, it's he's made every cut. So, 7,000 GPP play.
Yeah, I have Hickok down here. Like you said, a cut making machine at 7K. We're looking for that over and over again. Wyndham Clark, 100% on board with you there. JT Poston is very, very interesting. You know, that miscut that jolted the Twitterverse, but it was a cut making machine there in two cuts here, the T30 and a T27. So the postman might be back. I really like some Dylan Fratilli this week at $7,300. Local boy, good iron player. T20 here last year in his first attempt coming off a T18. So I like that Fratilli call quite a bit. A couple others that you did not mention. You mentioned that he's won here before, but Marty Party Laird is tilting as he can be. He's missed three straight cuts, so not coming in great form. We've seen this with Marty on courses he really likes. 5 of 6 made cuts here, including a W. His last two events, T17 and a T18 here. So he really, really likes this course. You could try to get him at $7,000. And another one, he might be on steroids. He might not be. But Scott Stallings is a bomber that when he's on can play really well. It feels like he's GPP only at 7K. But it's interesting.
He's ripped, isn't he?
You know, he's just ridiculous, like bursting out of his shirts. It's guns out, suns out with Scotty Stallings there. But if I have to narrow it down, I'd say like Fratilli, Wyndham Clark, Poston would be kind of my main ones there. Like Hickok at 7K, like you mentioned as well. So some to definitely take a peek at.
I'm going to throw one more at you at 7,000, Brian Gay. I forgot to mention him. Just in like some course history sets that I look at, he was there pretty high and his form coming in is not terrible. He did finish 6th here 2 years ago. So,
yep, him and his pink skulls on his golf bag. yeah, I got pictures of him if anybody needs them. 6K range. It's actually some options here. Jesse, what are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like just per the usual, I try to avoid this range at all costs, but there's some names down here, man, like some guys who you would normally think would be in this range, but in this field, they could be 7,000s easy. Nick Watney's one. Adam Schenck's been playing pretty well here of late. He finished 58th here last year, 33rd in Puerto Rico, did miss the cut at the Valspar, but at 6,700, you can take a chance with him. DJ Trahan, another guy. Last time he played here was in 2016, missed the cut, but he did make the cut in 2013 and finished 15th in his two straight top 20s. And they're kind of the lower end events, the opposite WGC events, so weak fields. But either way, this is borderline that. If you take away the top five guys, it really is that. And then last but not least, so like I said, I'm not a huge fan of this region, but I just want to kind of give a shout out to this dude too, Chip McDaniel. What a hell of a name.
That's a name right there, man. My God.
He's from the University of Kentucky. He played golf.
Now I get it. I was wondering where this is coming from.
Anyways, so he finished fifth in Puerto Rico last week. He shot 9 under on Sunday to come in top five and get an exemption to play this week. So super deep, $6,000. I'm not saying play a shit ton of him, but you know, he played really well last week. So, you know, if you're in a large field GPP, you're playing 100 lineups, you know, you might throw them on one or two.
There's your Big Blue Nation plug of the day. In the 6K range, I'll go back to my guy that I think I mentioned every time when he's down here is Rory Sabatini. Not great course history here, but coming in great form. So $1,600, I could go take a look at him. Completely agree with your Nick Watney take at 69 for cash games. I'm a big fan of going down there on him. Harris English is interesting. He's never fun playing Harris English, but 4 of 4 made cuts here, including a T36, his last go-round. Vaughn Taylor is kind of one of those iron players. It's a little longer course. It's a little scary, but he does have some good history here as well. At $6,800, made T16 here last year. You mentioned Shank, who I don't mind. One of my favorite sub-7K guys, I'll go back to him again, is Julian Etulin. He's 1 of 1 made cuts here. He's made 4 straight cuts on tour, T26, T24, T36, T35. Always below 7K, so $6,700 for Julian on board there. And then the last two are more GPP oriented. Roberto Castro at $6,400. He's got the game to T25, even T24. He also has the game to implode rapidly. So he's a definite GPP play down below. And then Carlos Ortiz at $6,500. He's a birdie machine. He's made 1 of 2 cuts here and missed a cut 3 years ago in T15 the year before. But like you look on tour, T39 missed cut, T29 missed cut, T9. Total GPP play, but when he makes cuts, he plays really, really well. So someone else to think about in the 6K. But safety-wise, you know, Sabatini, Watney, even I mispronounce his name. I just call him K. Lee. He's coming in great form, making tons of cuts. He's going to be a popular one. But Julian Etulin would be one I really like at $6,700.
K.H. Lee is the one who withdrew 2 weeks ago, right, when he was
– yeah.
He was semi-chalk. He was 8.5% owned at the Valspar. And then,
T26 last week.
He withdrew with a hip. And then.
Yeah. Made Twitter go ablaze.
And then.
It's pretty great.
There's 26 last week. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. He's been playing well when he plays. All right. That gets through all the pricing. Let's take a quick run through and give our top plays at each spot. 10K and above. Jesse, who is your top play?
I go with Cooch.
So if I play anybody here, it'll be Sungjae. I'm just going to say it now because I can see myself doing it by Thursday morning. If you had to play one guy in the 9K, who you playing?
For sure, Kokrak.
Okay, outside of Kokrak.
Jason Kokrak Jr.? What do you want me to do here?
Pick one guy outside of Jason Kokrak in the 9K range.
Glover.
Yeah, go Billy Ho. But Kokrak is the play for both of us in that range. Give me two guys in the 8K range.
Juiced, and then Palmer.
I'm going to go Answer and JB Holmes. Really has my attention this week, which scares the living crap out of me. Give me 3 or 4 guys in the 7K range.
Is JB in the Masters field? I bet he's not.
He won the Riviera. Shouldn't he be here?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Yes, he is in. Never mind. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, it takes me back to, like, a couple years ago when he won Houston to get into the Masters field. Anyways, where are we at? 7,000?
7K range. Give me about 4 guys you're looking at.
4?
3 or 4. Give me 3.
Harding. I think Neiman is GPP viable, given his past chalkiness and miscut last week. So Harding, him, and then Wyndham Clark.
I'll go Siwoo Kim, Fratelli, and Wyndham Clark would be the 3 for me in the 7K range. And who's your favorite guy in the 6K? Just one guy.
DJ Trahan.
DJ Trahan. I'll go Julian Etulin. That's my guy. All right. Cash game plays. If you had to start with 3 guys, who are you starting with?
Kokrak. Can you roster him 3 times?
I know. You would if you could. You'd watch him 6 times. I don't know, 5. You'd be different in one spot.
Kokrak's obviously – I mean, like, he's like my number one play on, you know, on the board or whatever.
You're going to want and done him, aren't you?
I think I've already have, haven't I? I don't remember.
I'll check. I got the database here.
I can go check too, because I play that. Whatever I pick for that, I also play it on, you know, as my number one play on. Anyways, so Kokrak is going to be number one for sure. Play.
You have not played him, by the way.
Okay. All right. So I could. Probably shouldn't, though, because then I'll miss the cut. So I think List, you know, his chalkiness mixed in with just his ability to $8,000 is makes him a cash game potential for me. So I will also put him in that range. And then kind of one that's a little bit off the wall is Juice.
Yeah, 85. I don't mind that at all. My three main plays here in cash would be Furyk, Answer, and Fratelli. That's where I'd start my builds. I know Furyk's not sexy, but just make the cut, Jimmy. Just make the cut. If you had to start a GPP lineup, what three guys are you using? Kokrak and what other two? I'm not making fun of you either, because I agree with everything you're saying. It's just I already know where you're going, so I'm going to beat you to it.
No, Kokrak for sure. Like, so one thing that I will say with this, with the way that the prices are this week, Stars and Scrubs will not be as popular as it would be in weeks past. So one way to kind of go Stars and Scrubs, if you start with, let's just say you start with Juiced, Kokrak, and then you go Glover, that's going to be kind of Stars and Scrubsy, but yeah, it still leaves you $7,600 on, you know, per player. So then we can go Wyndham Clark, of course, and we can go back to Kokrak and put him in there two more times. But so, I mean, you can kind of go a little bit balanced and, but kind of a little bit more Stars and Scrubsy, if that makes sense. I don't know. But those would be my three. So Kokrak, Juiced, and Glovers, who I probably will start a GPP lineup with.
Mine, if I'm doing GPP, it's Sungjae, Johnny Vegas, and JB Holmes. Three boomer bust guys. Just give it
I don't mind that.
Straight to the veins. Like, I can see all of them top 10 and all of them just flying off the rails.
No, I don't mind that at all. That's actually pretty good. I mean, as far as, like, with the upside, especially, you know, I mean, JB Holmes at 8,000 has got this event. He beat everybody at Genesis.
And like, regular listeners to this show know we're not, like, JB Holmes, like, truthers. Like, we usually clown on JB Holmes. But when I was making my little cheat sheet for the podcast, I saw him at 8K. I was like, that just doesn't work in this field. He's like 8K at Riviera. He's not 8K in this field.
Right. He is from the University of Kentucky, too. So,
oh, so you claim that, huh?
He went to the University of Kentucky. What do you want me to do?
I'm just joking. We don't really root for JV.
Fucking lost to Auburn. What? I mean, I've got to find something good in like the worst game of the year. We could do a whole podcast on that game.
Yeah, we might have to at a later date and time. We definitely
might have to. We'd have to do it like this week, because after this week, I'm over it. Because it's
you're in Masters mode. That's right. All right.
I'll probably be in Masters mode Thursday morning, if you want to be honest. Once I wake up and see the ownership and that three of my guys started 3-over 3-3. And
when Coke got three putts on one, hell breaks loose. Well, we're all tilting our face off in this Slack chat. Okay, so picks to win. Kokrak's 28-1. Who else you got?
So besides him, I'll pick two more. What's Juiced's?
Juiced is he's 45-1.
Okay. What about Palmer?
Ryan Palmer is 55-1.
Yeah, I mean, those odds like suck, but in this field, you know. If you want somebody like what's Wyndham?
Wyndham Clark. This could be a fun one. It's he's 110-1.
I mean, that might be something to sprinkle someone right there. At that odds in this field, I could see him, because I mean, you know, he did contend at the where was it? Where was he in contention?
Was it Valspar?
I've already forgot.
Or Honda?
Honda.
Yeah. Now this is a fun week. This is a fun week to get like some. It's a fun to get some like top 20 guys. Like, play Wyndham at top 20, you probably get about like 15 or 20-1 at least.
That's not a bad idea.
For me, like Billy Ho at 28-1 has some leverage to me. Abraham Answer at 40-1. Another one I like is Dylan Fratelli at 80-1. I think there's a little bit of legs behind that one. But there's just some interesting prices when you look at it. You mentioned some of your guys, like Lucas Glover's 33. There's a little bit of life on that, but yeah, it's just the way the field is. J.B. Holmes at 50-1 has my attention now. The more we talked about him today, which is really terrifying me, and I'm praying to God I don't click J.B. Holmes in OAD this week. I really don't need to play him in OAD, but I just might. I just might. We shall see how it goes. But all right, Jesse, any final thoughts on the Valero Texas Open?
I don't. This is like I really can't wait till next week, man. I'm super excited about having Kevin on and talking about the Masters, and then having the whole Masters week, and then all the coverage we get with the Masters. And
I'm so excited
about that.
Pretty darn awesome. Jesse's been there before. Kevin's been there many times. So some live like input on the Masters, Augusta.
Do you remember we did that whole podcast with him and Sheridan, and they went hole by hole?
Yes,
and described each hole in detail.
Yeah, it's perfect. I don't think we need to go that deep this time, but we will definitely do something like that. That is definitely happening. So everyone, be on the lookout for that. We're trying to lock down our recording time, but we will get that one all lined out. But until then, give us a rating review on iTunes. We much appreciate it. Jesse is on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I am at BDandrick, and the podcast is at Always Press DFS. Should be an interesting one this week. I'm not saying it's a bad tournament. Should be interesting, though, and the Masters is next week. Thanks for listening. This was the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the Valero Texas Open. Catch you guys later.